Welcome to the No Script Show. In this episode, we are looking at web standards, what they are, why they matter, its principles, and why we should apply them. You can find all of the show notes and resources at noscript.show 33. So that's noscript.show/33. And the link, if you're watching on YouTube, will be in the first comment just below the subscribe and like buttons. And as always, over there is David Wormsley. How are you doing, David? You all right?
Yeah, I'm very well, Nathan. Thank you. Yeah. Yes, I'm in a strange location at the moment, quite uncomfortable, but
Bless you. Let's hope you manage to keep going for the next 30 minutes or so. Good luck.
Anyway, so this is actually the kind of last in a bit of a series that we're doing, really. It's the sort of last philosophical pillar of our website owner's manual, just for a bit of context for this. So the website owner's manual is this kind of living document and style guide that we're working on to help us with web projects. And underpinning that is some of the well-known established principles. And web standard is just one of these that I mentioned in the preface of the manual itself. The others, which we've already covered so far, so this brings to the last, is inclusive design, designing for everybody, content design, giving users what they need and when they need it, the indie web, and agile development. So really the last one, I think, that sort of dovetails together to give us, if you like, some, I don't know, credibility to the way we approach websites is web standards. So that's what we're going to talk about. And there's a lot, again, as always, for you to read on this.
Oh, it's all good. I luckily, I'm all right at reading, so that's fine.
And I'm useless.
We can totally do that. So if you want to stick up the next slide, I will read it out for those people that benefit from that. Here we go. So I guess we're trying to figure out what web standards are. And this slide is entitled Modern Web Standards. Shared rules is what they are, that keep the open web open and interoperable. They keep it robust across devices and browsers. They cover things like HTML, CSS, JavaScript, accessibility, performance, and security practices. This means, and there's three bullet points here, this means that we can use well-structured semantic HTML to give content clear meaning. We also separate content, presentation, and behavior so sites are maintainable, and aim for cross-browser and device compatibility instead of relying on proprietary or fragile features. Standards evolve, so it's a commitment to staying aligned with the best current practices. So that's the slide, Red. They're all very laudable, aren't they? They're lovely. But whether or not we manage to keep up with those,
Do you want to bring our faces back?
Yeah, there we go.
Need to see you. Yeah. I've got really nothing to say because that's a good summary of this. So I'm going to end up giving you another slide to read. So
that's okay. I enjoy the reading. It's all good. So, have you moved it on? Yes, you have. So this is the evolution of all of that. I mean, we're quite lucky to have had that evolution, by the way. I mean, it could have all started as a proprietary platform locked down by, I don't know, governments or private equity or whatever. So we're quite lucky that we had this history. But here is the history potted into five little bullet points. The W3C, which I always struggle to say, was founded in 1994 to guide the web through open shared standards. We're very lucky that we had thoughtful people back then that made those decisions. In the 1990s, browser competition created incompatible implementations and fragile websites. Designers often used HTML tables for layout because CSS support was still immature. And then by 1998, the Web Standards Project, or WASP with a small a, began pushing browsers to support standards properly. And more recently, better support for HTML, CSS, and JavaScript helped the industry move towards semantic, maintainable, standards-based web design. Good.
I find this history quite fascinating. Yeah. I mean, we talked a few episodes back a little bit after I'd read the Tim Berners-Lee book, you know, the most recent one, I think, from 2025, where he's talking about it. So it's quite interesting how at certain points that the W3C could have not existed or could have been taken over by, you know, commercial concerns. But I've got a few notes, so I'm going to read my ones out, actually, which is that the web standards was never just about clean code, which is, I think, what a lot of people associated with. It was always about preserving the web as a universal, low-friction medium, something for everybody. And in a way, it's there to safeguard the future against the more harmful effects of capitalism, because, you know, we would all end up with proprietary and you know, it is a sort of stand for democracy, isn't it? It does empower people there. And I think, you know, we've talked about this a lot because we've gone over the history and that with this whole table-based things with the websites and stuff, and how, in a way, that kind of wrecked the web, because it was a way of being able to, with your HTML, be able to reach so many different people because screen readers could read them. The content had some sense to its markup on that. And it's still quite incredible, because in recent history, I still think of React, and I think others do as well, as a very similar mistake. You know, this idea that you kind of put your JavaScript before your HTML and do that, but it seems to be dying out a bit. Is there anything you wanted to say?
I'm just sort of going to reiterate the fact that this really genuinely could have gone another way. And I'm really struggling to find anything where humans have been so, let's say, I guess philanthropic, that's the wrong word, egalitarian, let's go with that, where this endeavor, which anybody could have seen, could have been just packaged up and sold. You know, access to the internet is pay to play. If you want to have a website, you've got to pay a fee to this company over here who controls, I don't know, the northeast of England internet, or the UK internet, or the French internet, or whatever it may have been. It really could have gone that way. And it wouldn't have surprised me if the people who, you know, the sort of founding fathers of the internet, for want of a better word, it wouldn't be surprising to me if they had intuitions which they had to bury deep, you know, that like, oh, I wonder if you should do it this way instead. Maybe there's a... But also it wouldn't surprise me if they were approached by some fairly deep-pocketed individuals who would have loved it to go that way, but they managed to resist all those temptations. And now we just sort of take it for granted, in the same way that, I don't know, we take shelter as a basic human right, and we take the right for freedom as a basic human right. We now pile this in with that, you know, access to information via the internet, more or less as a human right. And it really didn't have to go that way. And I guess we're lucky in the parts of the world where we live, because that is available to us. But, you know, there are certain areas of the world where that is not the case. And I'm sure it would be a different description that would be given of the internet in those places. So, yeah, we're very lucky, basically. Long may it last.
Yeah, and I hope we see, WASP, the Web Standards Project, was, I really remember that. I kind of came into web design, I guess, when that was strong. And, you know, you've got leaders of that creating, I've forgotten the name of it, that thing where you could restyle HTML to show there was Zen Gardens.
Yeah, what you mean.
The people voices there were sort of fighting, if you like, against the tables, because that was taking the web off in the wrong direction. And I think, you know, hopefully we're seeing more of that again, because it's always under threat, I think, the web itself. You know, AI is obviously a threat to it at the moment.
Yeah, I think an interesting pivot has happened at some point, where when the web began, almost nobody was employed on the web. You know, like there maybe a few people were getting paid to make websites, but it, you know, it was just this buildup of protocols and buildup of infrastructure and hardware and the backbone to the internet. But very few people were actually getting paid in order to be on the web, if you know what I mean. But fast forward to now, we're recording this in 2026. There's a lot of people who are being paid to be online. And so, you know, economics kind of compels those people to wall up as much as possible and to, you know, create as much wealth as they can from that thing. So there's this interesting shift where the sort of philanthropic side, back in the day that we're talking about here, we're looking at all this history, people, I think, just approach the internet in a different way. It was more of a thing that you did perhaps as a hobby, perhaps in your spare time, perhaps as a greater good, mapping things how they might be in the future. And now that there are so many people whose jobs are online, we do have this sort of more walling up thing. You know, you build a platform and you put a paywall around it and all of those kind of things. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if we can survive it, whether we can have both the open web as well as the more closed web living in harmony, because certainly the closed web requires the open web in order to operate. But sometimes I think the closed web forgets itself and forgets to acknowledge that the open web needs to be there.
I've made some notes about open source as well, because that comes into it. Yeah. But I'll move on to the next slide, another one for you to read out, which is just going over some of the basics.
Okay, so here we get to the nub of it, really, why all of this matters. So web standards reduces technical debt, improves performance, and helps sites to work well for more people in more places for longer. That's a nice summary. It makes site easier to maintain, extend, and integrate with other tools. Visitors get faster load times, better accessibility, and fewer glitches. We avoid unnecessary lock-in to proprietary technologies where an open standard does exist. Yeah.
And I think that's where you can live. I mean, there are reasons why you might need some proprietary stuff, but often what's happened is that the need to wall people off and make money means that the open standards often get ignored. Everybody has to be on the platform when actually they don't, do they?
I mean, no.
There are so many websites
like
that. And I think, you know, moving on to the open source thing, which I, you know, for me, it's pivotal to this, as doing this show and me sort of moving away from WordPress, was the fact that, you know, I was very much into the open source and that, and there's a new automatic documentary which is out at the moment talking about the freedoms that something like WordPress or open source offers over proprietary. But I think that's all well and good. But my problem often is the same attention doesn't go to open standards. And a lot of the open source is really controlled by investor or corporate money that keeps it running, who may not be so committed to the web standards themselves. So I think it's just remarkable. It was just saying that the W3C has managed to bring together, if you like, all the biggest competitors to agree on things for the common good. I mean, it's always been a bit of a push and shove thing where perhaps some people, as I think Tim Berners-Lee mentioned about, there was, you know, some people in Google that were kind of splitting up a little bit of the W3C. That's why we end up with, and I always forget what it is, what WG, the standards for HTML came out of a bit of a tussle there.
Oh, but, right. Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so we sort of had this sort of two documentation thing going on, because it was a kind of a power play, I think, subtly. It's in his book anyway.
It's always politics, isn't it?
There's always this attempt. But this came out of that sort of shift of the fact that we got this end of browser wars, interoperability, idea that for the common good, all of these browsers are going to, at least at that level, have a common HTML and CSS that everybody can use, and it will work the same in all of the browsers.
Yeah.
So there is at least that, which I think has been, you know.
It's a miracle. It's a miracle that any of it took off. It's a miracle that it's maintained itself. It's a miracle that people kind of did avoid the temptation to wall everything off. We're very, 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 very lucky to have all of this, because, you know, you can, you know, rewind the clock and replay the universe. It feels like 999 times out of 1,000, this doesn't happen. You know, it just goes into proprietary locked walled garden systems right at the beginning. So that history and those loud voices at the start, we're very, very lucky to have had them.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Berners-Lee particularly, it was quite astute to realize how things could go wrong with something, which, of course, you know, the web was created out of public money, as most things are, aren't they? They come initially, the public fund for these things. It's just, you know, there's some billionaire turns up and able to buy.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see in the future, you know, in the same way that, I don't know, a great way to summarize it would be, you look on banknotes in any country and they've always got their kind of great figures from the past. And often they're really peculiar people, like, you know, people who won battles and killed lots of people, you know, oh yeah, we'll put them on a banknote. But it'd be interesting to see if in the future, this thing that we're talking about, the internet, gets that kind of status, you know, it becomes this epoch making thing. And whether the likes of Tim Berners-Lee get that moment, you know, get that plinth outside of an important building in the world somewhere where there's a statue of Tim and Vint Cerf and all of those kind of people. It'd be interesting to see how their legacy kind of plays out.
Yeah, for the web anyway. Let me move on to the next thing, the core principles.
Okay, all right. So core principles are summarized in 5 bullet points, and they go as follows. Progressive enhancement, that's the first one. So start with a solid, accessible core that works in basic conditions, then layer on enhancements for capable browsers and devices. Then we've got semantic structure. Use HTML elements for their intended purpose, so content is meaningful to both people and machines. That could be browsers, search engines, assistive tech, and so on. Responsive design, design layouts, typography, and media that adapt gracefully to different screen sizes and orientations. Performance and resilience favor lightweight assets, efficient code, and graceful fallbacks over fragile, heavy solutions. And finally, security and privacy. Use secure protocols, for example, HTTPS. Avoid unsafe patterns and respect user data. Gosh, there's a lot in there.
Yeah, sorry, that was a long list of things. Yeah. I should put in some tongue twisters for you.
Yeah, future. There was one in there. I had to get my head around. Yeah, well done.
I think that probably does sum up the core principles. Is there anything?
No, hopefully if you're building websites, all of those dominoes have fallen at some point. You know, whether or not you implement them, at least you know what they all are. I mean, they're the kind of basis for literally everything. I mean, the thing is, it would be nice to be brilliant at all of those things, but I think it's fair to say there's a lifetime of research in every single one of those bullet points, you know.
Well, yes, I get stuck on the first one, which is progressive enhancement. I mean, there's a lot of great progressive enhancements, which I use now, which is like we've got the Views Transitions API, which lets you gracefully move from one page to the other in an app-like way, which of course you can add, and because of the fact that I think Firefox is adding it later in this year.
Oh, really? Okay. Nice.
Yeah, so it's there, I think. It's just it's under the hood at the moment. I don't think it's out for the public, but it's almost there. But you can add something like that because it doesn't affect people, and it's the same with things like text wrap, where you can have this automatic, the browser will automatically balance or make pretty your text so you don't have these widows. And these are great progressive enhancements, which I use. But when it comes to the things where you go, I want to use one of the new tools, but it will break it for people who don't have, who have whole browsers. I'm pretty poor on that kind of stuff.
Right. Know? Okay. Yeah. But it's amazing that that is possible. If you think about it, you know, how many things have you used in the real world as well as online where it is what it is? You know, if there is no enhancement to anything, you can't sort of slowly move up the ladder of capabilities. It's just, no, that's not possible with that thing. But, you know, it's brilliant that the web can evolve and new capabilities can be launched into browsers. And, in some cases, they may work or they don't work. But in the case of view transitions, if you don't use it, nothing worse occurs. It's just you don't get that lovely, I don't know, the title moves across the page as you go from an archive to a blog post or something like that. But that's wonderful that that's possible. You can sort of slowly build it up over time, this sort of trickle effect of capabilities that land, that people can use. You can see it out there in the wild, other people implementing it and copy them. Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah. And I think, on the semantic structure, I think there's never been a time where, well, certainly for me, that I've been so aware of the fact that we have all these HTML elements that if you use them, it helps to make sense of the content, particularly for people who, you know, for accessibility particularly. But I've never known a time where people are so conscious of it, even if they're kind of getting it, you know. For a long time, particularly with visual builders, you just put, even you use divs, you weren't really bothered whether you put in a header. And,
oh, yeah, you would use the font size to indicate a header, and it would, you know, a paragraph with a font size of 40. Followed by a paragraph with a font size of 14. That was a header because it was easy that way, wasn't it? Without any knowledge that a header is actually useful. If you're just going on the visuals of it. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah. No, it's fine. That's it. And the fact that there's over 140 now HTML elements. It started with only 18 when it came
right,
out.
Right, okay.
So
Gosh, I didn't know that number.
Yeah. So I'm going to move on. I think we may only have one more slide.
I think we do. No, we got the goodbye slide as well, but here's the next one then. So this is about application. So how website owners can apply this or apply this. Website owners don't need to know every technical detail. We just kind of alluded to that, but they can still make decisions that reinforce standards-based practices. And here come 5 points about that. Prefer solutions that work in a regular browser without special plugins or proprietary viewers. View transitions, I guess, is a good example of that. Avoid demanding features that rely on magic, in quotes, if they create performance or accessibility problems. Keep content structured with meaningful headings, lists, and labels rather than styling alone. Encourage use of responsive layouts and media that will work well on tablet, mobile, and desktop. And finally, periodically review the site for outdated technologies, unsupported APIs, insecure embeds, obsolete formats, and plan on how to reduce them. That kind of summarizes what we were talking about 1 minute ago perfectly into sort of how go from A to B, how to implement. That's great.
Yeah, and that's it. It's kind of interesting, particularly the last point actually for me, because I'm just redoing a site that I only did, I think, maybe a couple, 3 years ago. And I'm just so surprised how much, particularly with CSS, how much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just things like, which things we talked about before, which we've got things like details and summary, which now you can kind of make it work without JavaScript to be a kind of frequently asked questions, a sort of drop down thing, you know, which works as a group and all that kind of thing and be accessible. So there's a whole load of stuff, which I'm surprised how much I'm chucking out of old CSS only from a few years back.
So in that scenario, you're going in and getting rid of, like, I don't know, accordions and things like that with
yes, I'm just
browser-based details and summaries instead. Yeah, there's a lot of overhead that you can get rid of, you know, JavaScript libraries that you don't need anymore simply because the browser now handles that. That's interesting.
Yeah, formats of things like WebP, replacing those. I'm surprised that there wasn't support for that a few years ago. And just the whole logical properties where you don't talk in terms of top, bottom, left, and right, but you now talk about inline and block positions. So it's for internationalization. So I had to change all of that stuff out. Anyway, sorry, that's just slightly off the point. I guess, you know, looking at these, when I'm looking at these bullet points that you read out, I think the first two, you know, which is, you know, sort of avoiding plugins and avoiding features, you know, that work like magic. I think a lot of this kind of stuff is covered. And I think we maybe should do a show on this one because there's the W3C rule of least power, which to me is something which I have to keep telling myself all the time, like mantra, because I think it's natural to want to sort of overcomplicate things all the time.
But isn't there an urge to impress clients all the time? Isn't there that urge to sort of show them that you're at the cutting edge and you can do these modern whiz-bangy things that they've never seen before? And yeah, look, I can do this for you. Look, nobody's seen that before. That's new and exciting. But maybe we don't. Maybe we need to get out of that.
Yeah, there is that level of it, but there's also the level of the, you know, reach. I mean, I was mentioning it as well. I mean, you know, there's a lot of times when WordPress is the only solution and still is for the clients that I've got because that's what they need. They need to be able to go in and update the content and that needs to go live straight away. But a good chunk of the sites that I made literally are so simple that they should have been done with HTML and CSS. And it's that kind of thinking. It's like, why did I jump onto all of these things which need all this extra support when I've just got something that works in the browser with the most basic web standards? You know,
ease would time, I guess, you know, and muscle memory and things like that. But yeah, you've had a wonderful journey though, haven't you? Because I think it's fair to summarize your journey as you've had to do a lot of learning, but curiously, I think you've really enjoyed it. Like actually enjoyed it. You know, I think you've got a lot of a philosophical standpoint now that you probably didn't have before, you know, that you're much more wedded to open standards and interop and all of those kind of things. because you're now running up against them and why they're important. Whereas before, it was more about, well, where can I find the latest plugin to do this thing? And yeah. And I think from an excitement point of view and a philosophical point of view, you've really made leaps and bounds, and it's enriched your life studying this sort of stuff, I think.
Yes, I think so. And it gives you a sense of optimism. There is a sort of sense at the moment, I think most people feel it with technology, is it's a bit because it's run by people who are far away, who, because there's a sort of inequality in our mm-hmm. access to technology. Mm-hmm. And I think, I really think there is a growth in the sort of indie web. And I think it speaks to Gen Z, who are even more skeptical of what, our generation have kind of done under global capitalism. And I think, where standing up for the web gives you a sort of purpose, if you like. It's a statement of democracy, a simple technology that we all own and should be encouraged to use and keep it that way rather than get too accepted. We wouldn't be where we are without, capitalism, I think, anyway. And proprietary work that's been done by people, but the shift has gone too much, and I think we're seeing the shift back. So yeah it should be something very something to be excited about, where I feel with a lot of technology that I'm locked into and I have to go with whatever the person who controls that particular platform says I have to go with this. Well, no, and it's quite positive how the web CSS and HTML has been improving over the last few years. So
it affords you some sense of freedom and ownership. And also, I think it's fair to say that during the course of doing these podcasts, we've been able to paint a picture of really moral custodianship of the web by these individuals and organizations that we've mentioned multiple times towards the beginning of this episode and multiple others, that there does seem to be like this, I don't know how to describe it, this moral backbone which runs through the whole thing. And that freedom that it affords is amazing. I'm really struggling to encapsulate what's in my head there, but I hope you get a sense of it. Optimism maybe is a great way to sum it up. But we're lucky and privileged that we're able to stand on the shoulders of giants, I suppose.
And we've got no more apart from our final slide, which has just got a few
just the references. So I'm not going to read these out. There's just a bullet pointed list of various different pieces that have been covered and which map onto this topic. I guess these will go in the show notes. Just say that one more time. Noscript.show /33. I think that's right. Is it number 33? Yeah, I think so. So noscript.show/33. And I'm desperately trying to make that caption available to us. Yeah, there we go. There it is. Like that. noscript.show/33. Go and check it out. I think that's probably it, is it?
It's a wrap.
It is.
Not text wrap.
Rap. Very good. Yeah, very, very good. In which case, I will say sayonara, and we will see you next time, David.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.